Gorgeous George and Ghost, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes are back and reporting for duty here on a Sunday night for your Monday morning delivery. Hope you all had a nice weekend. Let's get to it. So, of course, you know we had the UFC on ABC 5 card in Jacksonville, Florida. We're going to discuss that. Man, there was some scraps on Saturday. Those fighters came out and put it on the line. Jacksonville got themselves a good show. And if you were just perusing ABC, which is one of the major networks, and you came across these fights and you liked that type of action, I'm telling you, some new fans were made. Kudos to all them athletes that performed. PFL had a show as well on ESPN. And this was on Friday night. This was the PFL 6. For the 2023 regular season, this is the last chance to get points and get into the playoffs. So we'll go over that whole deal, including a bit of a fiasco in one of the fights that led to some very controversial news. One of the athletes that qualified for the playoffs, it has been pulled and replaced. We'll reset and we'll go through all this. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Sunday night. June 25th. Because there's no other way to begin than to talk about Ilia Topuria and Josh Emmett. I don't care if McGregor stabbed a nun or Jones and Ngannou went at it in a parking lot. This fight was awesome. It's almost kind of like what I signed up for in covering the sport. And as a fan, when I sit down for my entertainment, I know there was some lopsided scores. I get it. Topuria was awesome. Let's give him all the praise in the world for the next hour. But so was Emmett. Emmett also made it a dance. He came to fight, and there was some very dangerous hooks that he threw along the way that staggered Topuria. So he had a moment or two in the fight. And then at the same time, he didn't just sit there and get thumped. I mean, he was fighting back at times. And this fight was beautiful on the feet. Whether they threw punches, they threw knees, they threw kicks, whether they grappled on the ground, which wasn't much. But when they did, just – and the cardio, dude, the toughness, the resolve. Like, oh, my God, man. I think I even stood up and applauded, and I wasn't trying to get anyone else to do it or anything like that. I was just in awe, man. It was a great fight.
It was. It's definitely, that's the type of fight that you want people to be watching. It got brutal at times, to the point where I was sort of hoping they would stop it, just because he was kind of doing the same stuff over and over, but he was doing it so well. And Emmett's game is just, he didn't really have an adjustment to make. And he had taken so much of a beating by that point that I just felt like, hey, let's just protect this guy's career. You know, maybe he doesn't come off the stool in round four or something. I mean, it was pretty brutal. And that kid is just, he was quicker. He was stronger. He had a better fight IQ. You could just tell he figured Emmett out early. And he just stuck to that script. And it was so impressive. And you can't even really like fault him for not getting the stoppage, because he did everything you could possibly do. Emmett's just tough. Emmett's a tough out. That's all there is to it.
Yeah. Here are the scores. 49-45 from Eric Colon. And he was the only one to give Emmett a round. And it was round one. So, 49-45 was his score. The reason it wasn't 49-46 using the standard 10-9 was because in round four, it was a 10-8. Sal D'Amato, 50-44. So this is the score Eric Colon would have came up with if he hadn't given Emmett the 10-9 in round one. D'Amato gave Topuria all five rounds, and they were all 10-9s with the exception of a 10-8, and that's why it was 50-44 and not 50-45. And then the last one is Chris Lee. Chris Lee, man, that guy got aggressive. He had 10-9s in rounds 1, 2, and 5, but in round 3 he went 10-8, which none of the other judges did, and in round 4 he went 10-7, which we've all declared, well, somebody's pretty much out, and we're yelling at the ref, because if you've gotten mopped up that bad, this fight should be over. Now, of course, we say that, and MMA is so unpredictable that pretty much anything can happen. I don't think I saw a 10-7 that day, but I did see 10-8s. So I'm okay with 10-8, you know, in round four, since the other two gave it as well. I think we're all in agreement. And in round three, you know, I'm not working off my best recollection, but I just do remember a lot of one-sided moments for Ilia Topuria. And these are all experienced refs. So, hey, if that's how they saw it, that's how they saw it.
I don't even think Glass Joe gets 10-7 rounds. They are just, if you go 10-9 and you think about what happens in that round, then you go 10-8, what is it that you need to add to a 10-9 score to get to 10-8? Boy, I mean, you have to go pretty far to make a 10-7. And what we always say is, if you're going to be writing down 10-7, the referee didn't do his job, because a fight just shouldn't go to that point. It's too much of a mismatch at that point. But if you're ever going to put one down on a paper, this might be the case. I mean, there were some pretty gnarly shots that Emmett was taking at times. But yeah, I'm not a big fan of that 10-7. I mean, I get it if somebody has to write it down, but it's more, I don't like that the referee lets the fight go that far where that you even have to put that down.
If somebody were to tell me, how do you envision one? I would say, well, first of all, an early takedown, body triangle, and then just go on after the neck with different, you know, attacks from both sides. And then when they get up, you're staying on them, you're riding them, scrambling back to the same position, maybe some ground and pound. But the only thing I can think of, because there was a round where Topuria was putting it on him, and just when it looked like the ref could jump in, Emmett would move, you know? And if that happens, and if there's enough of those sequences where you're like, stop it already, then that's all I can think of. And think about what a stretch that would be, you know, because that just doesn't happen really, really too often. But it was there, you know. I don't want to spend the whole hour talking about it. But I did see some 50-43s on MMA decisions, which means two 10-8 rounds. I saw two of those. And a lot of 50-44s, which seem to be the most common score, 50-45, that means all scores to Topuria, but no 10-8s, which I would disagree with. And then the 49-45 score, or there's 49-44, 49-45, 49-46. That just means they all gave Emmett a round, and then they went anywhere from no 10-8s, so giving Emmett a round, and no 10-8s for Topuria, to a 10-8 to a 10-7. So a huge disparity, but all for Topuria. And Topuria looks so good, along with being undefeated, that we're all just basically saying, you got next, pal. If whoever wins out of Volkanovski and Yair Rodriguez next month, this guy should get next. Now, I get it. Volkanovski's been champ for a while, so there's always going to be the old immediate rematch for a long-standing champion. But if it's super one-sided, or if Volkanovski just does the job, dude, I'm now more excited about Topuria versus Volkanovski than Volkanovski challenging Makhachev. And it all happens just like that.
Yeah, I mean, how quickly the landscape of the division can happen, that's pretty amazing, because it wasn't that long ago that we were making that fight, because we said, look, it just seems like maybe he didn't clean out the division, but some of the guys that were kind of outside looking in hadn't dipped their toes in yet. And that's what's happened here in this time that it took for Volkanovski to fight Islam. since then, now you have a Yair Rodriguez, which I think we all feel like that he deserves to be there. He's had some good victories, and he's explosive. You don't look at that fight and just go Volk all day. You see methods of victory for Yair Rodriguez. That's what you want. You want it to be competitive. Now you look at a guy like Ilia Topura, and outside looking in, the zero, right, on his record, that's a promoter's dream. That's big. That's what you need. So now that division has life, and it has life with Volkanovski still at the top. You don't feel like you're just kind of, he's just running through bodies. It doesn't have that feeling. So that's kind of a big deal. And I love the fact that this kid's good on the mic. He's good in the cage. And hell, he shows a lot of things that Volk is pretty good at. So I actually think it would be a pretty challenging fight. I'm down. I prefer Volkanovski to be a featherweight until there's nobody left to fight. And right now I feel like we have two guys right there waiting.
Ready and waiting. And if Arnold Allen gets a win, he's only lost once at featherweight. You got to give him his respect, you know. So there's a few guys in the pipeline. Like Chikadze took a loss. It's been a while since we've seen him. But, yeah, there's this new wave of fighters that are coming through. But Volkanovski was right. He said, hey, you guys, get your shit together. Get something that gets me out of bed, you know, so that I can get hyped up about this. And so then he went and did his thing, and he represented himself well. He deserves to get a rematch against Makhachev, but we just can't be doing that all the time because both guys are at the top of divisions that have contenders, and they need to defend those before we all of a sudden have one of those collision courses again. We did it right now. We shouldn't have because Makhachev had just won the title, for crying out loud. But we did it, got away with it. Great fight. Okay. But now let them, you know, do their thing. Let Makhachev at least get two title defenses out of the way. And then from there, we'll see what's what, like Tom Selleck likes to say.
And doesn't Volkanovski kind of need this too? Because really, when you look at his resume at 145, the three of those fights were against the same guy, Max Holloway. So what you want to do is be able to say, I ran through the division. I ran through different skill sets. That's where, you know, that talk of being the greatest featherweight of all time, being pound for pound, all that stuff. That's where you start to add stuff like that. And I think he needs those different looks, those different styles. I think that's what kind of puts him over.
Yeah, for sure. So he went through the old guard of Aldo and Holloway. And then, you know, he took on Brian Ortega. And then, of course, when things fell apart, the Korean Zombie. So he kind of got a little bit of that. But now if he can run through Yair Rodriguez and Ilia Topuria, then that puts him at seven title defenses. At that point, I'd say, Volk, what do you want next? And hopefully in the meantime, Makhachev also does something. Like, really, who's he going to defend against? Like, Oliveira? Well, you already beat him, so that's a rematch. And if Volkanovski's a rematch, then hey, squeeze in some fresh meat. I'm thinking the winner of the BMF might get a shot. That's what would have been nice about Dariush. You know, Dariush really should have just got the shot. It's as simple as that. Not have to go through Oliveira, and then Oliveira can kind of go through someone else, maybe, you know, but whatever. That's already done. It's in the past. No sense in bitching about it now. Congrats to Ilia Topuria. He looked amazing, undefeated, and wants to take the UFC, wants the UFC to go to Spain. And he mentioned, hey, look, I'll fight Holloway, which, by the way, I think Holloway's got a Korean Zombie in Singapore or something like that, right?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, fight Holloway in Spain would be great, you know, but I think right now the focus should just be, you just earned a title shot, my man. Congrats to you. Yeah. In the co-main event, we had another scrap. Macy Barber against Amanda Ribas. This was like just, how can I put it to you? I mean, it was violent, dude. It was really, really a violent fight. It was like it took place in a bar, and everyone just stood back, and they cracked bottles over each other, slammed chairs over each other. I mean, it looked like a WWE hardcore match. Both ladies had their moments. Both ladies could throw, and you could see when they threw, they had some pop to their strikes, whether, again, it was knees or kicks or whatever, elbows, punches. It was really, really nice, man. On the ground, it was nice. Those head and arm throws from Ribas were really, really nice. Barber's ability to, you know, get back up and scramble. Like I said, it was an all-around great women's MMA fight. I shouldn't even say it like that. It was just a great all-around fight that took place on the feet, on the ground. Super, super entertaining. I hope that both winner and loser got their full pay, and I hope both of these ladies get the type of respect where now all of a sudden going forward, they're main eventers, co-main eventers, at worst feature bout, but they're on big cards. They deserve it. They really sold their souls and laid it all out, man. Went out on the shields, both Emmett and Rivas.
That fight was Hagler Hearns esque, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. They had their back and forth. It hit the ground. It had its moments standing up. I don't even know what to tell Amanda Ribas, because obviously, you know, she took a beating. She dished one out back too, but I don't even know what to tell her. Like, I just feel like Macy Barber was really dialed in. Like, I feel like Amanda Ribas would have beat a lot of girls that night. She just ran into the one that was a freight train. Macy Barber's performance was pretty damn amazing. You don't see too many of these stoppages, you know, and for her to come forward and just pick the right moments to actually really put her foot on the gas, you know, off of some of them kicks and the fight IQ, just realizing when it was time to do that. And then to give Amanda Ribas her credit, there were times where she got in trouble and she found ways to survive and get out of it and then turn things around. Just an all around really, really good fight.
Yeah. You know, both of their noses, I know he was for sure, but both of them, they were leaking, man. You know what I mean? So they were having to fight through that as well. Like DC pointed out, you're swallowing some of that blood. I think he even went so far to say you can smell and taste the iron. You know, mm-hmm. So you're dealing with that madness, whatever gets in your eyes. It's not easy, you know, but man, it was just a scrap. And you just want to like make sure that, in fact, I want to go back to Emmett in a second, but you just want to make sure that they took the next step. You know, superstardom is a word that you reserve for your Jordan, LeBron, Brady, whoever. But in our sport, at least stardom, or at least that, you know, you get excited about hearing that they're on a card. Because Josh Emmett, he's pretty dry. Like, if you think about it, you know, he's not in Lamborghinis and he's not, you know, on yachts or anything. There's nothing really fancy about him. He's just a hard worker. But, you know, going into these last two fights, he was 18-2, man. He was solid. He was winning at a 90% percentile. And then he lost to two freight trains, you know, and Rodriguez is now fighting for the title. And now Topuria, who's undefeated and fighting for a title. But he's legit, man. He's a G. Like, I think he should be getting some type of love, like the Gaethjes of the world. Maybe Gaethje's done more of those fights on higher levels, you know, but higher level type fights, or profile fights, I should say. But I hopefully they get to that, because that's how I felt. Like, I was watching those types of fights. Go ahead.
He needs time off, though. You know, he needs to really heal and take some time off. Because it reminds me a little bit of like Calvin Kattar, you know, when he took that beating. It just, you have to understand that your body just underwent extreme trauma, you know, not just physically, but mentally. You have to get right. You need time away. Like, I know Calvin right now is recuperating from an injury, but I bet you that time for his body just healing and, you know, just getting right mentally is really, really going to help him. And hell, you know, that's a fight that a lot of people had going different ways. You know, maybe by the time Emmett's fully healed and took his time, maybe it'll be time for Calvin Kattar to come back. Maybe you run that one again.
It'd be nice. There's options for a lot of these featherweights to mix it up. Like I mentioned, some of the ones that have taken an L here and there. I'll peel back the curtain. There was a rumor of Ortega versus Chikadze, but it looks like that's fallen through. I think Chikadze can still fight, but Ortega may not be ready. But just that type of matchup, because when I heard that one, I was like, oh, hell yeah. They were looking at that for July or August, but not going to happen. But still, it looks like they're trying to get Chikadze in a fight. So look for some sort of a fight booking there. Regarding Emmett, what I said about I still want to say more about it. Okay, so Mike Bond did an article about whether Emmett's corner failed him. I thought he worded it really nice because he was respectful. And a lot of times people will read a headline and go, what's Mike Bond thinking, you know? But he laid it out why he said it. And it was kind of what a lot of us were thinking, including the announcers themselves, who just wondered, what do we get out of Emmett coming out in round five when he's clearly down four rounds to nothing? Okay, maybe round one's close and one judge said so, but he's just not winning this fight. And Emmett's got one eye practically closed. He's all lumped up, you know. But I did say something goes on Twitter, and I said pretty much the same thing. Like, I really, if they would have just said, no, he's not coming out, I would have said, yeah, that's probably right. But what I did notice about these fights on Saturday, and even going back to Vittoria and Cannoneer, the level of preparation and strength and conditioning that a lot of these fighters have is being shown off in their ability to recover. So they get 1 minute. And really, guys, if you kind of have a stopwatch, sometimes it's closer to 90 seconds between commercials and getting the rest and getting the corners out. So you got about 90 seconds to go in there and recover. You catch your breathing or whatever. And man, you know, what did I say about, who was it? I know Cannoneer. He wasn't even breathing hard after 25 minutes. And it was a crazy pace against Vittori, who is known for crazy paces. You know, Topuria, same thing, man. That guy was in awesome shape. And so what I'm getting at is, what I tweeted was, look, to be fair, if he doesn't show you anything, if I'm the corner, I'm telling Josh, look, you're down on the cards. You need that. You need to finish. His corner did tell him, you're still in the fight. I guess technically it was right, but he needed to stress to him, you need to knock him the F out or submit him, because you're not gonna win on the judges' scorecards. However, you're taking a lot of damage. You need to show me something early. And I tweeted, I think, 30 seconds. If he don't show me nothing, towel goes in, you know? And sure enough, Emmett comes out, goes like a bat out of hell. He was swinging away. He even landed a few punches. To Topuria's credit, he remained calm. He rolled with a few punches. He didn't get hit with the full effect. And then he settled himself. And I think Emmett, you know, because you do get that recovery, but obviously you're not the same in minute 26 as you are in minute 1, 2, 3, 4, 7, 9, 10, whatever. And so you could tell all of a sudden, you know, he started coming down once again, and Topuria was going to start taking over. So Emmett did at least let them know, hey, I'm in this fight and I'm going out on my shield. He wasn't just kind of a sucker out there. You know, he kind of literally did his thing. Now, the fight did start to reach a point where, again, I wouldn't have hated them if they just said, hey, stop it, you know, but I think they knew their fighter pretty well at that point. And now I want to give Josh Emmett credit. He starts to take off the gloves and he talks to DC. And when he did, he was really composed. He had clear thoughts. Maybe they thought he was going to retire, but a lot of times, going back to the Alistair Overeem incident 10 years ago, you just don't really talk to a fighter who's lost and probably concussed. Although, to be fair, that was an actual KO. Josh didn't have that type of a finish. He was just decision. But he expressed himself well and everything. So let's just hope things are good in that regard. And I think this is the fight where they said something about his ear was turning black, and that they hadn't seen that before. Because obviously we've seen cauliflower ear bleed and hang off, but the way it was turning black, and then Dominic said something about that's the ear doing its effort to protect the brain, which everyone's been having a good go at. Although, to be fair, Dominic does have dry humor. Maybe he was just joking, but I was getting scared, like, you know, man, 30 years in, we still haven't had our first death in the UFC. I certainly don't want that. But when you start hearing something like bizarre like that, and it involves the head, you always wonder, hey, man, is this our version of boxing? Just too many blows absorbed by these guys. And then all of a sudden you have problems.
I think it is. I think it's starting to go a little too far. But the big problem here, and the thing that stands out for me, is there's a difference. Like, It's difficult for me to watch a fight like that as much as I love the fight game. But especially knowing that once this card is over, the UFC just kind of forgets about you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for going out there and taking that beating on national TV. Really did good for our numbers, but we're moving on to something else. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing that they give you. There's no kind of pension, at least, that you say, man, I took a beating, but I'm falling back one day and I'm going to be taken care of. That's not there. And that sucks. And I've always, this is probably an unpopular opinion that I've always had, but for me, I thought the game changed a lot when they went from 3 rounds to 5 in non-title fights. I just feel like there is so much wear and tear that happens between 4 and 5 that adds on to your, it's practically another fight for some of these guys. Like if you tell Josh, look at Josh's face at the end of round 3 and then look at it at the end of round 5, like there was definitely extra damage that he took. And when you add all these extra rounds over a course of a fighter's career, it's a lot. So if you look at guys like Tito and Chuck and Randy, I mean, these are guys that had to fight a lot of 5-round fights. BJ Penn, you know, Frankie Edgar. Think about how many extra rounds Frankie Edgar has gone because of all this. It just seems like their careers would go a lot longer if they didn't do that. Maybe like if you were in a title contenders fight or something, then we get it. You know, you do have to kind of have a little bit of 5-round experience if you're going to be fighting for a title. But these extra rounds, I think, are what's shortening the lifespan of fighters. And I really did think Josh Emmett was going to retire. He took a beating. He looked very frustrated, and it looked like he was trying to get those gloves off fast. And I feel like that's maybe why they went after him, because honestly, you just didn't need to interview him at that point.
Yeah, our best to him. Oh, I know. He basically, what Bond pointed out in the article was it could be that his corner realized that after losing to Rodriguez and now this fight, he's now a long win streak away from being a title contender, and that's why they tried to motivate him. And of course, there's going to be the whole Leon Edwards thing, you know, out there, which obviously they rallied him. He threw the kick. His life changed forever. But Emmett went out there, and like I say, he really went after him that first 30 seconds to a minute. And even at the end, he fought well. I was going to say that if you look at the scores after round 3, so it would have been 29-28 and 230-27s. You know, it was clear that Poirier was the better fighter through 15 minutes. Is much going to change in rounds 4 or 5? We don't know. But could this be a title contender fight? Well, it was for Topuria. If Josh Emmett wins, I don't think he's getting a title shot because he just took a loss. He's back in the mix, but it wasn't a clear number one. It wasn't two coming off wins meeting with the unofficial title of number one title contender. So did it need to be 5 rounds? I don't know. But remember what I said for the last few weeks, pay them their full money. You thought enough of them to make them headline one of your cards, then one of them shouldn't go home with half their pay.
Right. And I did hear that take from a lot of people, the Leon Edwards thing, and I have to disagree. You have to look at Josh Emmett's face, okay? His face was a lot different than Leon Edwards' face. Leon Edwards was just frustrated, okay? But he was still seeing straight. People that are listening to this, at some point today, I mean, kind of be careful, but just cover one of your eyes and try walking through through your house a little bit faster than what you're used to. It trips you out a little bit. Try. Have you ever closed your eye while you're driving? Like that's really fucking hard to do, let alone fight another man. Like they were in different boats. It's a little different. You have to look at just how damaged Josh Emmett was. Leon Edwards wasn't that damaged. Leon Edwards was just mostly frustrated. You know what I mean?
That's a good point. And it was a title fight, so that was the highest of the highs, and that's why they in no way would have ever pulled him from his fight. But yeah, I agree. I agree that if it had been done between 4 and 5, I would have been good with it.
Me too.
And I was also fine, and only because I've seen this. So I've seen the corner tell him that, like, you need to show me something, or I'm pulling. Because then it's like if you just go, hey, you want me to throw in the towel? They're going to go, no, you know? Especially when the camera's there and these fighters, as tough as they are, they always feel like their toughness is on the line and it's not. Like, they already are gladiators. But still, then I think one way to compromise is to say, okay, let's get you ready. Do these three things. You know, I think maybe you might have a shot at knocking them out, but we need to finish. But if you don't show me something in that first minute, then I'm going to look to, you know, and I think the fighter at that point can probably, you know, they're not going to sit there and go, okay, that sounds like a deal. I mean, obviously they're not thinking clearly, but I think they'll give you a head nod as if to say, yeah, that sounds good. You know, that sounds good, because you trust these guys to come up with game plans for you, to hold your mitts, to, you know, train you and yell at you and, you have to train them all. You have to trust them all the way through. And if they're watching the fight and seeing what's happening, and especially with one eye closed and that killer on the other side's never lost, come on. Mm-hmm. You know, so hopefully it's a good lesson for all of us. And hopefully whatever that was on his ear is just, you know, blood that sometimes can
accumulate.
Yeah. And our best to Josh Emmett. All right, so look, we're 30 minutes in. We've only discussed two fights, but hey, I have no problem with it because those two fights were money. Let me give all the results, and then you can choose what you want to talk about. Austin Lane defeated Justin Tapa. No, sorry, this was a no contest because the accidental eye poke. Austin Lane actually looked pretty good with some big throw kicks that he was doing. He was using his distance. Well, look, the heavy-handed Tapa, he was never out of it, but this was only 30 seconds in. And, I mean, his fingers went really into the eye socket. It was ugly. Ugh. I do want to say this. I commended Keith Peterson for, you know, one of the stoppages he had. It was well timed. I think it was the Hevis one. Mergliotta, who I really like, by the way, I appreciated it that early on he said, hey, don't worry, we're going 5 minutes. You know, mm-hmm. Usually it's always been the standard cup, you know, but things have changed. You can now get good 5 minutes for an eye poke. And so he's kind of telling them that. I think he was communicating good with both fighters. And but then we reached a point where I wouldn't say ugly. It was just concerning, right? Because he was really pushing for this fight to continue. And he was kind of telling them, look, it's going to clear up. You got the 5 minutes. It's the way it is right now, but you'll see that with time, it'll get better. You know, we're going to make this thing rock and roll. But you could tell he was pushing for a fight to actually start again. Okay, you know, like maybe the first time, I kind of get it. Then Top of saying, but I can't see. And then now the doctor comes in, and the doctor's kind of running some stuff by him. And then there was just this uncertainty and this communication between Mergliotta and the doctor. So you could tell the doctor, I don't know, I shouldn't say this, but to me it just looked like maybe he was a little inexperienced with how it worked. And so he's leaning back on Mergliotta, but then Mergliotta's telling him, hey, it's your call. It's your call. But because Mergliotta was kind of advising Tapa that it's going to get better, you're going to be okay, you know, or something like that, then I think the doctor was like, ooh, like this is a, you know, almost like, is Mergliotta letting me know that, hey, you know, maybe we should just let this go because it's going to be all right. You see what I'm saying? Like that communication was just a little weird to me. The way they were all talking when Tapa was being very, very clear that he couldn't see. Now, by then, we had all started to see the replays, which they have access to. And so does the referee, that's whatever commission officials on the side. I think at that point, they need to be going, whoa. Like, hang on a second here. That was really, really bad. This guy is not in any way gaming the system or anything like that. Like, and his eyes starting to close, goes. It's starting to close, and it's starting to, like,
it was puff discharging. Up.
Like, yeah, in a weird way where you just thought, okay, that's not the normal one. You know what I mean? Together with his insistence that he can't see, I wish I would have seen a little bit more concern and better communication between ref and doctor. Look, I'm not trying to hang them or, you know, take away the doctor's license or never have the other guy ref. That's not what I'm saying at all. Not even close. I really like Mergliotta. I hope he refs this weekend. I just hope that they can both kind of learn from this moment. And remember, I said that the commissions, usually talk on Monday on a conference call, and I just hope that's kind of communicated a little bit, because the aesthetics of it all just, it didn't kind of jive with, I think, what we're used to in the way cases like this are handled. I think he needed to be, there's this little saying that gets thrown around, he needed to read the room a little bit better, and the room in this case was top one is high. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's actually a really good way to put it, because I didn't even really, and I didn't know how to explain myself on this, because I felt exactly the way you felt. 99% of the time, I really hope. I even groin shots. Like, I wish the fighters would just take a little bit more time. Sometimes it just seems like they rush into it because they're afraid that they're going to run the risk that the fight's going to get stopped. They have that time, and I wish they would take it. And I think sometimes you need the referee to kind of remind you a little bit of that, and which he did. But with about 2 minutes left, the eye had really puffed up by that point. There was discharge coming out of it. Some of it was blood and some of it was, I don't know what the fuck, but it did not look good. And when you see the doctor look at the eye, the way the doctor had to try and pry the eye open just to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now you even get to the point where you're I think you have to think, even if I do feel like I can continue, do I really want to continue like this? You know, off of something that's right. Not my fault. And these are big boys, man. They hit hard. Like, do you really want to get a KO over all this? Like, I think you just live the fight another day and everybody's going to understand. We all saw that replay. We saw how nasty that thing was. You just walk away. And so, yeah, I think maybe it went a little bit too far on Mergliata's side. But like you said, in no way are we trying to crucify him or nothing. I think maybe even when he goes back and watches the I don't know. He's right there. So I guess he's staring right at it. But it just looked awful. The eye was horrible.
It almost seemed un-Mergliata-esque. Like, that kind of surprised me that he kind of handled it that way, because he usually is a little bit more, I guess, just dialed in, professional. Every circumstance is different, and it didn't look like he applied his knowledge and experience. It wasn't applicable to what was at hand, the hand that had been dealt at that time, you know, and the communication coming from the fighter was enough. Well, those two things were matching, you know. Actually, there was three things. His eye was jacked. He repeatedly said he couldn't see, and we had seen the replay. The whole stadium, the announcers, everyone was well aware. Oh, that was an ugly one. It wasn't like the little slappy ones, which even those, by the way, can graze the cornea. We saw what happened with Vitor and Randy years ago. Even that can be the one that can stop a fight. But this was a digit going into the eye socket. So, anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. So I mentioned that the. Austin Lane defeated Justin Tala. David Onama looked great against Gabriel Santos. Rendon Allen submitted Bruno Silva. That was your main card. Sick. All nasty fights, violent fights. Neil Magny defeated Phil Rowe. Split decision. Randy Brown defeated Wellington Turman. Mateus Rebecki, although I think it's pronounced another way, defeated Loik Radzivov. Tabitha Ricci defeated Jillian Robertson. Joshua Van defeated Zaglas Zumagulov. Jose Mariscal defeated Trevor Peak. Good fight. Jack Jenkins, another good fight, defeated Jamal Embers. Split decision there. And Cedric Dumas defeated Cody Wendage. Bonuses. Fight of the night, Topuria versus Emmett. Although you could have given it to Barber or Hebus. Could also given it to Mariscal and Peak. I even enjoyed Jenkins and Embers, but whatever. Performance of the night, Macy Barber and David Onama. Okay, so once they went the route of going Emmett and Topuria, which, again, I agree with, even though it was one-sided, give Emmett that cash, give him his win money as far as I'm concerned as well.
Yeah.
Who gets the performances of the night? Macy Barber, I'm feeling it. David Onama, I'm feeling it. But I thought Brendan Allen looked good. You know, the submission was nice and clean, and I thought, there you go, there's another finish. That we're all good with. Rebecca's finish was nice. After that, it was all decisions. That's two more 50 G's I thought that could have been given out, that have been given out in the past.
Yeah, nobody's hating on that. I mean, they were good performances.
Yeah, so, but whatever. I don't even care. I'm going to drill this over and over and over. I don't care if everyone gets sick of me saying it. I just feel like the more we say it, the more hopefully it will happen. So there you go. How about that? All right, guys. We can still discuss some business here regarding the UFC. But did you want to say anything about those fights? Sorry.
I thought overall the whole card just kept you interested. You know, I thought the Tabitha Ricci fight, Jillian Robertson, I thought we were going to get a little bit more out of them too. But it was still a good fight and a good performance for Ricci.
Yeah, definitely. Robertson dropping back down to 115. She kind of reminded me a little bit of Patricia Frady. She just seemed a little flat, and I don't know if that's the reason, because she didn't say it. But there was just, I don't know, she just didn't seem like as active. Sometimes the first thing a fighter will tell you is, I feel faster and more fluid, you know. But we've had back-to-back weeks where I've seen a fighter just kind of not look themselves. Anyway. Robertson did well for herself as a flyweight. We'll see how it goes. Maybe she goes back up. Maybe she doesn't. In the meantime, congrats to Tabitha Ricci. She looks solid. And, yeah, I really like that Jack Jenkins guy. He has a nice arsenal of kicks. And from what I heard on the broadcast, and it's funny because the guy said, I think every time this guy fights, we're always going to say it. This guy goes has cracked three tibias from his kicks. So his kicking game is no joke, and he was putting it on Emmers. Keep an eye on that guy, man. He's from, I think, Australia. I want to make sure here. You know, MMA Decisions, by the way, had it all for Emmers. He's a 30-27 or 29-28. I thought 29-28 was good enough. Could go either way. But, you know, yeah, this is unanimous for Emmers on MMA Decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's get to the dumb stuff that our sport sometimes goes through. Elon Musk versus Mark Zuckerberg. You know, when they kind of joked about this, I kind of laughed it off like, you know, this is dumb. On to the next tweet. But apparently, I guess, for one, I thought it was a troll, but I guess Zuckerberg did maybe say something. He did propose something. And then the other guy actually said he was in. And so then Zuckerberg pulls the Habib and says, send me location. I'm still kind of laughing it off. But then, of course, Dana White, who, by the way, doesn't like gimmick fights, now throws his name into the hat about how much he would love to see you do this, see this fight happen. Look, I get that. They're billionaires, and they impact the world every day. You know, one owns Twitter, the other one owns Facebook. But let's not forget, Elon Musk is mid-50s. The other guy's almost 40. This fight's going to be garbage. The only reason we're going to tune in is just to basically see one of the two, whoever we're not rooting for, get their ass kicked. But it's going to be fucking ugly. There's going to be nothing beautiful about this fight. It's going to be absolute garbage. Now, just because that means that it'll translate into pay-per-view draws, you could get Ronaldo versus Messi. That'll turn into pay-per-view draws. But that's not what we do. Those guys aren't MMA fighters. It's just not the place for it. You know, If Dana also owned Triller along with Lorenzo, instead of doing the stupid fucking slap league, they happen to own Triller, I'd go, hey, go do it at Triller. Go do it at Triller. Knock yourself out. You know, you can have a Megadeth perform and Ric Flair be on the announcing table, you know, and slap each other. And then we'll do Zuckerberg versus Elon Musk. Okay. You know, but not the UFC, not the NFL of our sport. Ah, man. Now, of course, everyone always tries to say, are you going to watch it, bitch? You going to watch it? Well, of course I'm going to fucking watch it. You know what I mean? I'm not fucking dumb. That doesn't mean that just because there's anything I want to watch that it needs to be promoted or it needs to be this or it needs to be that. No, it doesn't mean that, you know? But I'm just kind of like, not disgusted, because I'll sleep fine tonight, but I'm just like, you're rolling up my eyes about, you know, how we can be the NFL one moment and be talking about a great fight like Topuria and Emmett and Hivas versus Barber, and then all of a sudden it's like, dun 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 dun. It's time to play the music. It's time to, you know, it's like the Muppet Show.
Right. I actually am not going to watch it because of what you said. Like, it's going to be a shit fight. It's not going to be interesting. And if I have to pay for it, I definitely am not going to watch it. You could easily just tell me, hey, guess what? Elon Musk got mopped up. That's good enough for me. I don't really want to sit there and figure out what Zuckerberg did right or wrong, or like, I just don't give a shit. To me, it's a big deal that 16 years of trying to prove people that this is a sport and covering and doing our radio show, and even before then, the things that we used to do before then, nobody has more time than Dana White and Lorenzo Fertitta trying to legitimize this. Why are you going to take a step back and do something so silly? You know, like, nobody's ever going to take you serious if you do stupid things like that. Like, it's already, Power Slap is already making you kind of look silly. Now, on top of that, you're going to do something like this. Like, just because people will tune in doesn't mean it needs to be done on that platform, right? Like, the NFL has really fast people. Doesn't mean we should try and make them race Usain Bolt, right? There's a time and a place, and this is just not the place. And I'm not even sure it's the time. Like, who at the end of the day, who gives a shit?
They would probably put it on the pay-per-view card, and it would sell well. And I guess we would have to watch it, but I just know that we, you know, I wouldn't take it serious. I don't think anyone would, to tell you the truth. Those poor saps are going to go over there. No one's going to be more of a gangster than the other one just because they beat the other one. There was this governor, I think he was a governor, lieutenant governor. I don't know if you remember. We had him on the show for the state of Nevada. And he kept this shit quiet. He trained. And then one day he just said he wanted to have a fight. And he did. And everyone went, man, salute. And I think he even won the fight. Hey, that's great. He didn't make a big deal of it. He didn't do any press. And then all of a sudden he just showed up for a local event. It was in Reno. That's where the capital of Nevada is. He fought. He did well. Everyone gave him his praise. And I think everyone gave him respect. Like, okay, that's a tough hombre, you know, whatever. And then that was that. But he went out there and fought an actual MMA fighter who was about as experienced as he was. Neither one of these guys are that. Although it does appear that Zuckerberg has been training pretty hard at the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu part of it all. But again, he's 39 going on 40. You know what I mean? And so athletically, you're not going to expect too much. It's the other guy I'm concerned about, who's mid-50s. I don't know that he's been training. So, you know, like I said, I don't know. We have to talk about it because people have been talking about it. They've been clicking on the story. So it's not like it got shot down. I mean, people are interested. I think GSP wants to help Musk train, and Jones offered to train Zuckerberg. So it's getting a little bit of a pub from those people, you know?
Yeah. At the end of the day, that's what you want if you're the UFC, right? But is this really going to happen? Like, I seriously doubt that this will really happen. If you're Dana White, yeah, it's good to have your name attached to these people, to the talk. But I think deep down inside, he's got to know that I don't think this is really going to happen.
Yeah, exactly, man. Do you think it happens?
No.
Neither do I.
And I've been really careful when I say that now, because I said, I don't think Floyd and Connie Mack happens. Like, I really didn't think that happens, and it happened. So ever since then, I've kind of kept my mind open a little bit more than what I normally do. But even with that, I just don't see at the end of the day. I mean, wasn't Elon Musk like sleeping at Twitter and just all of his efforts going, like, where is he going to find time to train for a fight at his age? What for? Like, what does it prove?
Exactly. How about Jake Gyllenhaal against Mark Zuckerberg? That looks closer to what maybe could pull me in just because of the age. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. How old is Jake Gyllenhaal?
Gyllenhaal?
Yeah. He is 42 and Zuckerberg's 39. One was just training to be in a movie and the other one's been training. I'm more into that one, to tell you the truth. Do I want to see it on the UFC pay-per-view? Probably not. Actually, you know what? Put that on an ABC card, to tell you the truth, because you want a lot of people tuning in, but I guess what they want is to sell the pay-per-views.
Mm-hmm.
Their mind's always business, but man, I think Dana White and Lorenzo should try and own an NFL team or something like that. I think that would be more appealing to them. You know, of course, that's way more effort, but they are my age, early 50s, and maybe they just don't have the juice and the energy to go after that. Although I think Jerry Jones bought the Cowboys around this age. Whatever. We're giving it enough time. How about the PFL goes? The PFL, before we tell you the results and what's happening, Roush Manfio fought Nathan Schultz. They both had 3 points going into their last bout. The winner would basically move on to fight in the playoffs. But the problem is these two didn't give us a fight. These two gave us a sparring match. Now, I didn't watch the fight live, so I didn't know about all this. Then all of a sudden, I see the next day that they're out and Shane Burgos is in. Shane Burgos, who was dominating his opponent, but the last thing on his mind was to finish and get finishing bonus points. He got eked out. He wasn't in the playoffs. It was going to be another kind of one of those failures for the PFL where they sign a coveted free agent. They don't even make it to the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Like Anthony Pettis, for example. And so I saw the next day that they basically said, nope. We're going to make a ruling. These two just didn't fight in the spirit of what competition is. And therefore, we're pulling Nathan Schultz and we're putting in Shane Burgos. Of course, the first thing I thought was, whoa. Are you guys finding a cute little way to shove in Burgos? But I also knew that those two were close, training partners, really good friends. And then when it was told to me, it was reminded that, yes, one had even been the godfather of the other's kids. And I thought, ooh, well, you never know. Maybe they did have something. So Goz and I watched the fight. About 2 minutes in, Goz is like, oh, yeah, this isn't looking too good. And I told Goz, well, hold on. If we get 15 minutes of that, yes, I totally agree. But so far, I had seen a good kick to the body, another kick to the leg, a jab. And I thought, okay, I've seen worse. But sure enough, man. The way it played out, it did not look good. And then the commentary team was also, you know, they weren't getting fooled either. It was just not a good look, man, for either fighter. I don't know what kind of an agreement they must have come to. There had to have been an agreement. There's no way that a wink-wink could be communicated like that. Two guys that know each other that well, there had to have been some sort of an agreement.
You know, this, you have to remember that this broadcast team is 100% made up of former fighters, and you felt it. You know, you could almost feel like they were feeling insulted by this, and it was just such a horrible look all the way around. Whatever they did a really bad job at doing it. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like, even calling it a sparring session, I think, is giving it too much praise. It really was awful, and the PFL was in a really, really tough spot because they're not just battling making that decision. They're also battling the criticism that's going to come from, well, wait a minute. Look who is benefiting from this, right? Their big free agent signing. So they're battling two things, but at the end of the day, I actually commend them. I think they did this one right. If you go back and you watch that fight, I just don't know how you could serious with a straight face say, nope, those two guys were fighting. And like I said, they just did a really bad job of it. If that's me and George, and we're brothers, and we're like, oh, man, we got to fight each other. here's what we're going to do. George, at the very least, don't you say, hey, look, in round three, I'm going to put you in a chokehold. I am going to take your back. I'm going to put you in a rear naked choke, and I'm going to get you pretty damn close, but you escape at the end. You know, something like that. Or even when the 10-second clock goes off, let's just start swinging. You know, let's just do something that shows everybody that we are actually trying to do something here. Then on top of everything, you got the agreement with the corners, where the corners aren't saying anything. Like,
wouldn't corner against each other, yeah.
It's just dumb, man. It really is. This isn't the first time two friends have fought. Now, maybe I get it that this is a little bit different. Like, these are really, really close friends. I get that part. But you just can't do. You can't do what they did. And I don't know where the blame. I mean, most of the blame goes on these two guys. But I would probably give the PFL a little blame in the sense that you have so many options of what you can and can't do in these situations. You probably should have read the room a little better, like George said earlier in the show, and known that maybe you didn't expect them to do something to this point, but you definitely probably had a good feeling that it just wasn't going to be entertainment.
Perfectly said. The PFL, I don't know if they follow a formula, and if they do, then randomly, these two teams just happen to get chosen. Sorry, not teams, fighters. And when they did, if they had concern, they should have discussed it with them. And those fighters should have reassured them, nope, we hit each other. I'm sure, dude, I think they hit each other harder in practice, honestly, than they hit, than they hit each other on Friday. And, but if they weren't going to be able to do it, then they needed to come clean with the PFL. Now, if the PFL says, well, sorry, that's the matchup, you both lose, then those two fighters, like Go said, should have been smarter and said, okay, we'll fight, then huddle up and say, how are we going to do this? In fact, maybe even further to it goes, I would just say, submit me. Because what it looked like to me was one guy flipped the coin, someone flipped the coin, and Manfio lost. And he just offered, as garbage as they both looked, one looked worse. And so to me, it looked like Manfio was like, oh, I'm the loser. You're going to be the one that's going to advance in this tournament to get the $1 million. And then, I don't know, behind the scenes, if you're going to give me 200 grand, you know, if you win, and I'd give you 200 grand if I win. I don't know what, because that's a horrible thing to say. But who knows if that was the plan. At that point, I would just say, goes, let's just hit the ground as fast as possible and someone submit the other one. And that's that. Because the longer it plays out, the more clues you're leaving to basically faking a fight, dude. You know what I mean? And there's people that are gambling on this. There's people that pay tickets to come see fights. I mean, this is about the integrity of them and also the promotion and also the sport. Like, this isn't good, you know? And if both of them really felt that way, they should have communicated to the PFL. And if the PFL pushed back and threatened, whether you're in the same boat, you know, so if someone's staying home, then yeah, something quick with a submission. No one can say anything. This person gets to, you know, I would even tell you, dude, let's scramble. And whoever winds up on top position, the other one's just going to kind of flip over. At that point, we've agreed that I won the scramble. So now I'm going to win the fight. And there's no tapping. You know what I mean? Even if you poo your pants or pee or whatever. You ain't tapping, I ain't tapping, we choke, and then that's it. And then obviously I can sit there and I can bow and I can cry or whatever, but we're not going to do what these two guys did on Friday.
Yeah, it was such a bad look. And then even after the fight, like, you could just tell in their demeanors that they weren't right. They just weren't right. None of that was right.
You know, Brian Butler manages Roush Manfio, and he's not feeling this decision for them overturning it. He's mad at the PFL. The PFL said this did not meet the standards which all PFL fighters agree to uphold in competition. That's a quote, according to probably their constitution or whatever they have. Brian Butler's quote was, to make a subjective decision like this, from a promotion that stakes its claim in fighter advocacy is just a bad look, in my opinion. Judges make bad calls all the time with less repercussion. Roush and Natan are best friends and have been exclusive training partners for each other for 4 years. Oh, sorry, 4 years. Natan is the godfather of Roush's daughter. To say they know each other's styles, tricks, and techniques inside and out is a gross understatement. Situations like bad style matchups and lackluster fights happen all the time in the sport. But the unique thing about the PFL and the tournament point format is that it would sort itself out on its own in the end. Our client got half of his pay and 0 points to move forward in the tournament. This is distasteful and unnecessary. See, he must be alluding to something else. Goes, the reason he got half of his pay is he didn't fight. Manfield, he got no takedowns. The other guy at least got the 2 or 3 or 4 takedowns. You know what I mean? Then he was trying to get his hook in or whatever. Like, Manfield didn't fight. He went home with 0 pay because of that reason. Now, he's trying to say the fight was garbage because they intended it to be garbage because they never wanted to fight each other, which he didn't outright say. Well, then that's a whole other thing. But I got to ask Brian, what are you talking about here? Manfield fought horrific, you know, and so did Natan Schultz, but on a scale of 1 to 10, Manfield was a 10 and the other guy was a 9.
Well, I think this is a job for Judge Francis Ngannou, right? Isn't this what he was all about, was getting in there and advocating? Well, I think I would be absolutely shocked if Francis Ngannou watched that fight and said, you know what, Brian Butler's got a point. Like, I think it's just clear as day. It really is. That is such a hard decision to make as a promotion. They made it, though, and I honestly, I think I got to back them up on this one. I mean, that's just what it looked like to me.
I do, too. When you watch that, that just was not right. And again, I don't know how far back we would retrace it, if they made them fight or what, but if their feelings were that strong that they had to do this, then maybe neither one was in the position to go forward, you know. And I get it. It's $1 million at stake, but I mean, look at Mirab Dvalishvili and Aljo. They've done a good job of juggling, and one guy has just said, that's the man, which if Manfield wants to say that's the man, I guess, then go up to welterweight or go down to featherweight. I don't think he can go to featherweight, so just go up to welterweight, I guess, or just tell them, I'm going to fight in your arena series. Please pay me well, you know, because if we have to collide at some point, we ain't fighting. They've even gotten to the point where Mirab said, hey, I'll go to 125. I ain't fighting my brother. You know, and the other guys said, I can only make 135 a few more times. If I go to 45, it's Mirab's time. I don't know, but they've seemed to have figured it out in a way without having to kind of disrespect the sport like this. Right. I'd love to talk to Brian and maybe get some clarity on this because I'm just not understanding what he's saying about sending one guy without his pay. Like, that's the way fights work. One guy goes home without his pay. You know, like, I guess maybe his problem is the way that they got forced to fight. Our client got half his pay and 0 points to move forward in the tournament. His client is in Natan. His client is Roush, right? That's what the article says. Who knows? That's a great article if you guys want to read it. And Nolan King wrote it, and it talks about the different articles in that constitution that they have and what was fractured, I guess. And you can check it out and watch the fight on ESPN Plus. It's available. A couple quick things. Chris Curtis fights Anthony Hernandez. That was a nice fight announcement. I liked hearing that. And here's a complex one, but I'll say it quick. Macy Barber was asked, what's next for you? I thought she was either clever or she just stumbled upon this, but she goes, I want Alexa Grasso. I want a rematch, whether she's champ or not. Well, you very well know she's champ. So in a way, it was almost like she was asking for a title shot without asking for the title shot. That said, a few days earlier, Aaron Blanchfield said, hey, what about me versus Pena, since Grasso and Shevchenko are fighting, and I guess I don't want to wait for that. Put me in the other one. Now, me, I think Pennington versus Pena makes sense. Pennington was a substitute. Pena was supposed to fight for the title. Blanchfield has been competing at 125. I'd say Aaron Blanchfield, you only have to wait like 3 more months for Valentina and Grasso. Maybe she's scared that if Valentina wins, the UFC can't walk away from the possible trilogy. I guess I understand that. But I don't think she can cut the line on Pennington. Pennington's won 5 straight, man.
I mean, yeah, that all makes sense on paper. But the UFC's crazy and they're willing to do a lot of crazy things that don't make sense.
Musk
versus but in this Elon. Particular one, at in this particular case, yeah, I just don't see. Just wait it out. You know, just wait it out. Get better. Take that time to focus on you.
Macy Barber looks so good that I would love to see her fight. I think she needs another fight, though. I think, I don't know whether it's a Jennifer Maya or what's the one that's always winning by decision? The Blonde Fighter? That's her nickname, Blonde Fighter?
Oh. Huh?
Kaylin Chookagian.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if she needs to go through one of those kind of gatekeepers or whatever. But she probably needs another fight. But yeah, Barber felt good. Barber's win counts for like 2 or 3 wins. You know, I'll see other fighters win and you're like, oh, okay, good for you. But did you move up much? Not much. Barber really looked good. She got me excited for what she can do. She calls herself the future. Everybody's saying she should rename herself to the present. Maybe that's so. I don't know. That Team Alpha Male's done some good work with her.
Yeah, definitely have. She looked at me. She was explosive as hell, man.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, listen, that's kind of the recap from the weekend. A lot out there. Of course, you can always go to MMA Junkie to unpack these stories and look at the finer details and articles of constitutions and, you know, the long quotes by all of the notables and fighters that make up our sport. I think we'll have a little bit more on this whole Roush Manfield, Natan Schultz deal. Want to see if we can get Butler on so that maybe he can bring some clarity to all this. Because it's bizarre, man. I don't think we've really ever kind of gone through something like that. We've heard of the old Mark Hall and Don Fry stuff like 30 years ago or 29 years ago, 27 years ago. That was like in the caveman stages. One-night tournaments, fucking who knows what was going through their heads back then. But once we got regulated and the sport became proper, I haven't really heard of something like this. You know, I've seen terrible matches. In fact, my Mount Rushmore of horrible fights is Shamrock and Severn 2, which, by the way, a lot of people don't know this. They were told whatever state they were in, whatever commission, they couldn't use close fists. They could only slap each other. So maybe I give him a pass, but come on, doesn't mean you can grapple. You can't grapple. And these guys just rotated and rotated and rotated for what seemed like 25 minutes, I think, but it seemed like, 3 hours. Lewis and Ngannou, Esparza and Namajunas 2. And this fight might have just concluded the Mount Rushmore of horrible fights.
I don't even know if we can count it as a fight, but you know which fight was really bad that we were at? But it did have an ending. It was Gonzaga. And the Shaman.
Sean Jordan. It was a black guy named Sean, right?
Yeah. It was horrible.
Sean Jordan was the guy that played for LSU, I think. But it wasn't Sean. Let me look it up. It was horrible. But yeah, the knockout was vicious. It was at the MGM. Dad went with us.
And the Cobra.
The Cobra was there too?
Yeah.
Wait, it was? No, he happened to fight Sean Jordan, but it wasn't that guy. It was. Where was it?
What do you mean?
Was that? It wasn't Sean. Yeah, but it wasn't Sean Jordan he knocked out.
No.
Who was it?
It was a guy with braids. Maybe his name is Sean Jordan too. I don't know, but. He doesn't pop up on Gonzaga's record?
Kevin Jordan. Here it is. UFC 56. Kevin Jordan. a Superman punch. Wow. Yeah, that one was that was pretty bad. Well, we got the finish, so I guess we can't really.
That's why I wouldn't be on the Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, forgot about that one. You know who headlined that card? Wasn't it Franklin knocking out Nate Quarry? It was.
Yeah.
And that's when Hughes defended his title against Riggs, except Riggs didn't make weight, so it technically wasn't a title defense. So Hughes could easily have 9 title defenses instead of 7 because old Hoist Gracie didn't want to cut the 170 either. He cut the 175. He was going to look a lot better if he didn't have to cut the 170. Jesus, imagine if he had to cut to 170. Hughes could have thrown him outside the cage like Tank Abbott and Cal Worsham at that point because he basically had his way with him anyway. Yeah. All right, folks, we're really out this time. Catch us tomorrow. If you get this quick in the next 12 hours, don't forget, Goz and I will be doing Spinning Backlick at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, live on MMA Junkie. You just go to the website, look for the link, click, boom, you're there. Or just go to YouTube, youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. And you might as well subscribe to the YouTube channel. That way you're just always there. And if you hit the little bell, it'll make you aware of when we're live. We also can tell you that we will be doing a watch-along for UFC 290 on July 8th. So count on that. And Goz and I have some stuff ahead. Like, we're going to be doing Radio Row at the UFC Fan Expo. I don't think fans are available to cross over into that area. But we'll be out and about. So hopefully we get to see some of y'all. And that's it for now. Anyway, go out and be a champion. We'll talk to you soon.